How do we reverse the sort of corrosive blame that can tear apart a client's relationships? See, when a couple gets caught in a blame cycle, it can be so difficult for them to get out of it. That's because there's often one person who can't move on unless the other person changes. As Dr. Stan Tatkin sees it, this kind of rigid stance could reveal a neurobiological deficiency.
The wanting to change another person is diagnostic. For one thing, it shows a developmental delay, a lack of social emotional complexity. Perhaps it shows a problem with insight, with being psychologically minded. And if it's actually worse than that, it's a sign of poor theory of mind. Poor theory of mind, or theory of mind, is a function of the orbital frontal area, the temporal parietal junction, the insula, a lot of areas involved here, and they may not be working properly. Or there may have been an environmental deficit here in terms of theory of mind, meaning the parents didn't have one. Theory of mind means that I have a mind and I'm curious about it, which then leads to recognizing that you have a mind and I'm curious about your mind. People without theory of mind cannot do diaries. They cannot imagine what it's like to be another person. They can't put themselves in the other person's shoes. This is not a defense. This is a deficit. They never could do it, and that could be a big problem.
Now, real quick, theory of mind sounds similar to the idea of mentalizing, which we covered with Peter Fronagy in Module 2. Yes, they're both metacognitive processes, but they do have differences. For one, mentalization looks more at a person's ability to understand emotional and mental states in both themselves and in others, while theory of mind can be seen as more focused on understanding internal states as they relate to things like beliefs, intentions, and persuasions. With couples, we assume that they know each other well enough that they would have some ability to have this deeper curiosity of mind.
So ruling that out, we have regular old immaturity of people not being able to tolerate their own pain, not be able to see themselves, and operating in a insecure fashion where it must be good for me, and if it's not good for you, sorry. So that is the case with people who are in pain. Now, when we're suffering, and we're suffering in a relationship, we tend to come up with our theories. Our theories tend to be pro-self and not pro-relationship.
That right there can be key to understanding how blame can start to cause decay in a relationship. The formula is simple. See, I'm in pain, so I blame you. You probably blame me back. And then the problem becomes more about me getting my pain soothed and less about us repairing our relationship. And this focus on the self can be expressed in two different ways. It can either be, you're the problem, I'm annoyed, you should change, or it can be, I'm the problem, I'm a terrible person, you should leave me. Either of those scenarios are unworkable. We become victims instead of partners. The trick, of course, is to get the client to be more relationship focused. We want them to see how the behavior is affecting the relationship and what might be some ways to fix that. So, what would be some ways to fix that?
Partners who are, first of all, in therapy, and individuals who are blaming each other or wanting the other person to change, has to be seen first as acting out possibly. And if there is acting out, you can't do therapy. You have to confront the fact that partners are not collaborative with each other, and especially they're not collaborative with you, the therapist or the therapy, that they don't understand the task of therapy, which is to work on the relationship, not each other. And so that's vital. And therapists often don't recognize acting out, and they try to do workarounds or end runs around that. And that makes them feel and look incompetent, because what's center stage is not a therapeutic, not, you know, therapy issue. It's a, we don't seem to understand why we're doing this issue and how this works, and that we have to be on the same page with regard to task.
This is an important point that ties into the two different perspectives on self and relationship. See, there's often a simple confusion that can come into play here. People can confuse what they don't like about the other person with how they both are able to function as a unit. So what you get is two people who won't change.
People in couple relationships, biologically, psychobiologically, should be in each other's care, not their own. Therefore, best way for me to influence you, to seduce you, persuade you, to cajole you, is through attraction and knowing you better than I know myself. That's because I study you. That's because it's important. That's because I pay attention. And you do the same with me. We can shift and change each other because we're good handlers, good managers of each other.
This can help explain why some couples get stuck in a blaming loop that never seems to unravel. To get right down to it, they're often just inept at dealing with each other, or as Stan Tatkin would say, they're simply not good managers of each other. And there can be several reasons for this.
One, they don't pay attention and they never found the baby in their partner. And the reason is because they don't care. Nobody ever did it with them. They never thought they had to do that, so they don't do it. They want it done to them, but they don't do it. They don't figure out the other person. Everyone's predictable. Most everybody. There are some people who aren't, but most everybody is predictable, and most everybody suffers from at least one or two, but never more than three areas of vulnerability from childhood that will never go away. Like, I always felt like I was stupid. Well, even as I get older, I have enough evidence to show that I'm not stupid, but get around people that are very important to me, I'm back to feeling stupid again if I'm ineffective. So that never goes away. But my partner knows this, and she knows how to run interference. She knows how to maneuver me if I do a shame spiral, right? I know what gets to her. So we're experts on each other. We're good at each other. That makes us feel more loving and more trusting and accepting of each other because that's irreplaceable.
Okay, so when couples are blaming each other, it could be that there's an underlying relationship management problem. To sum up the way Stan looks at this issue, let's just review his three theories on working with blame in relationships.
One, that people don't change. Two, if they are going to change, they don't do it at the end of a gun, ever. That people only change when they're resourced, and resourced means that it's secure functioning, and secure functioning means that I accept you as you are, so there we are back again. And then there's this common problem of when I'm in pain, I don't think of the relationship as a problem, I think it's you. You're the problem.
I thought Stan put it quite nicely. He said, we rarely change when a gun is pointed to us at our head. We tend to change when we feel sufficiently safe and resourced so that we can risk changing a little bit. So in many ways, the task is like an individual therapy, only we've got to think of two people's needs simultaneously. What's going to make each one of these people be able to feel held and be able to feel safe enough so that they would risk moving toward their pain? And this has to do with normalizing it, normalizing the wish to be loved, as we talked about it. And also, I think, making sense out of it historically, to actually literally ask, when in the past did you not get what you needed? When in the past were you in a situation like this where you were afraid it wouldn't be forthcoming? And, or simply, when in the past did you have a feeling like this feeling that you're having right here and now? And often that will lead to, you know, the childhood referent for it or some other peer interaction or family interaction in which the person really had this feeling of, oh, you know, this desperate longing not being cared for.
Now, I just want to circle back for a minute to something Stan said about childhood vulnerabilities. And I want to tie that in to some of the parts work that we got into with Dick Schwartz in Module 3. The backstory of Dick's case study is that he was seeing a husband and wife who were suffering through a lot of misery in their relationship. The husband had a narcissistic personality, and he just heaped blame onto his wife throughout their marriage. The wife at this point had completely shut down. Dick could see that the husband was giving himself over to a protective part that was fueling all his blame. So he decided to work with him separately. Now, keep in mind what we covered earlier about the symbiotic relationship between narcissism and blame. So when Dick got to the point where he asked about the role of the protective part, the husband gave him a very interesting answer.
He was willing to focus on that part, and then, you know, he liked it. It wasn't a matter of getting parts that hated to step back. When I asked him how he felt toward it, he said, I like it. I depend on it. I would feel very weak without it. I use it at work. It has a way of intimidating people, and I like that. And maybe it's not the best thing for my marriage. So then I had him ask the part who liked it so much and felt so dependent on it to step back too, so he could get curious about it. So we're talking sort of like mindfulness now. I'm getting him in a more mindful state in which he can not only observe it, be separate from it, observe it the way mindfulness does, but begin a dialogue with it.
An essential part of these types of interventions is to get the client in a more mindful state, because only then are we able to bring more awareness to the part that's causing so much havoc. Once that's established, Dick has more runway to be able to ask the all-important question, what are you afraid would happen if you didn't blame everybody else?
It pointed to times in his life when he was being constantly berated by his father and also hit with a belt. And felt powerless. And this part, during that time, decided he was never going to be powerless again and took on some of that blaming energy of his father to protect him from his father. And when he was a teenager, would get into fights with his father, physical fights, an older teenager, coming from this part. And this part had sworn it would never let anybody dominate him again.
So it was this childhood vulnerability that had followed him all his life and had taken over all his adult relationships. And as Stan Tatkin shared with us earlier, this can be a big part of the recipe for a distressed marriage. Okay, so now that we've gotten to the underlying vulnerability, it can be critical for the practitioner to make something very clear. They need to make sure that the client's protective part feels very appreciated for the job that it thinks it's been doing all this time. Once the client feels validated, we can then move to the next step on updating the client's protective part.
So one thing we'll often ask these parts is, I would say, how old it thinks you are, Rick. And generally, the answer is in single digits. These parts think you're still 8 years old. And when I had him say, no, I'm not 8 years old anymore, I'm actually 52 and I run a company, the part was amazed. It had no idea. And just that updating of it, and that it doesn't have to keep protecting him now. He's not under the thumb of his father anymore. And it doesn't have to keep doing this with anybody that is in any way a threat to him. Really help that blaming part relax more. And then we could go to the boy who was still stuck in the scene of being beaten with a belt and get him out and help him heal. And then this blaming part sort of started taking a back seat to himself.
A lot of the work that Dick is doing here is helping the client's self take back control from all the protective and hurt parts. That way the self can become more of a leader, both internally and externally. What this means is, at least for Dick's client, he could now interact in a healthier way with both his wife as well as his employees. He could lead from an open-hearted place rather than from this one part that was always on the lookout for incoming blame.
And when we do couples work, we're striving to get people to speak from self to self, have self to self communication rather than these protective parts doing all the talking. So I asked to be the parts detector. And when they start to get into their protectors, stop everything. Have them ask those parts to step back, come back when you can speak, when your heart's more open. So I did that kind of practice with the two of them. And I still see them, but they're doing much, much better now.
So this is one way to help couples work through issues of blame. A takeaway here is that sometimes a hurt or vulnerable part can really gum up the gears of a secure, functioning relationship. If we can help to heal that part, we can help improve the way that a couple works together. In the next video, we'll look at how to work with the body to help a relationship that's stuck in blame. I'll see you there.